This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings once again to everybody at TFMR. It's Thursday, December the 12th. And since it's Thursday, that means it's time for another Thursday conversation. And I've got a real treat for you today. You may have seen somewhere on the internet over the last, week or so, I had a fun podcast interview with a friend of mine named Lior Gantz. And Lior posted that to his site, seven, eight, 9 days ago. And we thought at the time it'd be fun to have him turn around and come on TFMR so that I could pick his brain on a few things. And so today's Thursday conversation is with Lior Gantz. He is an entrepreneur and investor, founder of WealthResearchGroup.com. And fun guy to visit with. So Lior, thank you for taking some time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to be here.
My friend, before we start, in your own words, tell everybody about what you do in Wealth Research Group.
Wealth Research Group is basically a labor of love. About 3.5 years ago, I really had enough of seeing people frustrated about the markets, frustrated about the lack of good information out there. And mostly, I see people that are over the 25 years of age hurdle, and they think that they've done all the studying that they need to do. So life is a permanent school, and that's the way I approach it. So Wealth Research Group, what it attempts to do is congest the fact that I read about one book a week about finance. So that's about 52 books a year, and I've been doing that for since the age of 16, so for 19 years, and I invest personally. So congest all of that into a newsletter that offers both macro events and macro outlook and what I'm doing personally with my own money. We also highlight opportunities when I think they're very, very important.
Well, we will put that link to the WealthResearchGroup.com website right here on this page, so people can certainly go and check it out. My friend, I just thought, I know folks here at TFMR realize I'm starting to really turn my attention to 2020 after a year of 2019 that has kind of played out about as I expected. And now, we had the FOMC yesterday. We have Lagarde talking today. We've got all this trade war stuff that's on everybody's radar. I think we're set up for an interesting year of 2020. But my first question for you today, and folks that listen to these Thursday conversations know that we normally have three questions we focus on. I want to ask you what really surprised you the most here in 2019. Was it the way the stock market performed or didn't perform, or the gold, the miners? What as you look back now here in the middle part of December, what surprised you the most about this year?
The immediate rebound of Bitcoin early in the year was a huge surprise to many people, including myself. When I talked about in December of 2018, when I said, look, this is as close to the bottom for Bitcoin as possible. Bitcoin bear markets go for about 80 to 90% down. So from about 20,000, we hit that area. I said, if you're going to buy here, you're going to have to sit for a while. But don't worry, being early, you're not going to sit there for years and years. But it was incredible that between when I said on the newsletter, you should probably get in now to when Bitcoin started to rally, it was like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It was incredible. So that immediate rebound was very surprising and good surprising. The second thing that really surprised me was the Hong Kong riots. I was in Hong Kong in November of 2018, and we took a boat about 10 p.m. They have a night show, Craig, where all of the islands are projecting from each other's eye rises, incredible light shows, and there's an opera all over the islands. It's something unbelievable, really unbelievable. And, everything's packed. It's packed with tourists. Just everyone's proud to be a resident of Hong Kong, and they celebrate life. And boom, in June, major riots. And who knows where this thing will end? It's obviously downplayed right now in the mainstream media, but that was a black swan for 2019 for sure. The third thing that really surprised me was the performance of the four companies highlighted as the best plays for the rebound. If you go to the Wealth Research Group site, you'll see on the top menu, there's a button that says Special Reports. Actually, the first one on the left is going to be called December 2018, Four Big Brands, One Big Rebound. And basically, we said, look, this is really a painful event for the markets, the 2018 bear market in 1 month in December.
Yeah.
And we think these companies can snap real fast. And one of the companies we highlighted was Target. It's up 90%. That surprised me a lot, that it's up in 1 year 90%. That's huge. That's three times what the S&P 500 did. And then the second company that everyone was discounting and saying it's over the hill was Applied Materials, and that company's up 79%. So those two really surprised me. I thought they would rebound big, but this performance was insanely good for readers, for myself, etc. The fourth thing that I was shocked by was the impeachment charade. I am not an American, Craig. So for me, looking at it from the outside, and having spent time in over 40 countries, that thing resembles a banana republic. It doesn't resemble anything that has to do with the largest economy in the world, with some of the, one of the best places to do business around the world, etc. You know, America is somewhere that other countries, many other countries, as much as America likes to criticize itself, other countries look at it saying, look, this is one of the best countries to ever exist. And with all of its problems, etc., people from the outside look at it in a way that is very serious. And the impeachment is something that you can see that whoever scripts the speeches for Nancy Pelosi, you can see that they're using the words and the phrases that only hit home with the lowest common denominator. They're trying to get people that have no idea about politics and no idea about what's going on to flip on Trump. And it's sad to see. The words that they're using are these key words that are supposed to flip Americans and get them upset. And it just looks so manipulative that it surprises me that it's even going on this long. And but on the flip side, as you know, it has zero chance of materializing. So those are my four big surprises for 2019.
Yeah, and it was, and I think you hit them all. That Bitcoin thing is interesting too, because, you know, there was that bounce back in the summertime where it got all the way up to 12,000. And I remember watching it really closely because I own Bitcoin too. And it seemed as if there was someone who had a real interest in keeping it, you know, from snapping back and really getting some momentum above 12,000. Now all the way, you know, now we're down here in the seven or eights. You know, that halving is coming up in 2020. That has generally been a good fundamental positive for Bitcoin. Are you excited about the prospects next year?
I am. I like the halving part. I think it's a lot, you know, much more than before. I think it's much more priced in already. But what I don't think is, because everybody's talking about it, what I don't think is priced in is something that we'll probably talk on the second segment of the show. And that's, in my opinion, the top for the dollar bull market that's been going on since 2011. I can, and by macro view for 2020, I can talk about why I think there's going to be a much weaker dollar in 2020, not because other fiat currencies will prosper and flourish and become safe havens, but because of the trade optimism. The trade deal is the most bearish event for the U.S. dollar since the year 2000, since the Twin Towers came down. It's really one of those moments where the dollar is going to have a very bad market for about 5 to 7 years here, starting whenever the markets realizes that as they sign the phase one agreement and proceed with more trade deals, then many of these countries, especially China, has about a $2.5 trillion exposure to dollars and treasury bonds. They don't need them anymore as much as they did before. When there's no trade deal, there's no rules, of engagements, you have to hoard a lot of this foreign currency. When there's a deal in place, you know the rules of the game, and you don't need to hoard that much treasury bonds. So I think that is very bad for the dollar, and a weaker dollar is good for, obviously, for fiat currency. I'm sorry, for cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin, and for silver, for gold. So I think that's a big part of what you're going to see. More trade optimism, weaker dollar.
That's interesting, Leo. That's an interesting perspective, because I haven't heard that expounded upon a lot, because people are kind of focusing on the short term of this trade deal, and we've been talking about it now for 18 months.
So,
but I did want to ask you, what is
a trade deal?
What is that? Give me that macro view. What are you watching as we go into 2020? I mean, the dollar, the main part of it?
Well, look, a dollar bear market is the most important macro event in the world. It dictates most of the prices for assets, for everyday life, for many things. 61% of global transactions happen in the dollar. 50% of dollars are outside of the U.S. banking system, so they're traveling around the world. And whatever happens with the dollar is important for everything else. So in 2011, we started a dollar bull market. That happened because the Fed was basically the only central bank that refused to go below zero. And the treasury bonds refused to the long-term ones refused to get anywhere close to zero. So you had the euro and the yen at negative rates. And the Fed just did not want to go that route. That created a dollar bull market. That created a place where businesses would flock to, and especially since Trump came in, it created a situation where there's a demand for dollars. Then the Fed started to tighten, and it got really intensified in 2018. So you had a very anomalous year in 2018. Actually, the only time that the dollar outperformed all asset classes, which happened in 2018. So that's an incredible situation where cash outperformed all productive assets. It was 1969, the last time it happened. It was 2 years before Nixon had to pull the plug on the dollar decoupling with gold. That's how much a strong dollar is bad for an economy that has to work with exports and imports. So you can't have such a strong currency. You can have a very strong stock market, that's fine, but you cannot, as a country, have an incredibly strong currency when all other countries are weakening theirs. It hurts the exports-import balance, and I think that's why you're going to see a lot of policies that make the dollar a bit more competitive. And when I say that, I just mean that they want to lower it compared to other fiat currencies. It's currently trading at an all-time high of about 130 in the index, and that's a lot. If what they would like to do is get it over to the 100 range, and that's a 20% reduction for it. That's a big-time move for the dollar down. It probably takes 4 or 5 years to get it done. And during a trade war, all these countries had to hoard dollars, had to hoard cash, had to sell assets and cash up. So you have a lot of this excess in cash that is within pension funds, insurance companies that are underinvested right now. When they start to put that money to work, there's going to be no demand for dollars. There's going to be a glut of supply. And that's part of the trade war, trade optimism, macro view. I'm not the only one to say it and to call it. It's not something that's been broadly discussed, but it is part of some of the largest hedge funds in the world are preparing for this type of event.
Well, all right then. I guess that leads us to number three, Lior. That's a pretty good segue. We've got 2019 in our rearview mirror. We're looking ahead to 2020. I think you've done a great job of explaining, you know, what you think will be a key driver. So, as you put it all together, what do you like? What market or investment opportunity are you looking at in 2020? The precious metals? Is it large cap stocks? Is it fixed income? Bitcoin?
So, first of all, I love diversification right now as a part time investor. So for people who are part-time investors, not professional investors, which should be 99.9% of the listeners.
Yeah.
I think diversification is the key. The S&P 500 has outperformed all asset classes except for REITs for the past 10 years, and nobody predicted that. So, and including billionaires. You look at Ray Dalio, you look at Warren Buffett and Paul Tudor Jones, for example, Stanley Druckenmiller, they're all saying, hey, the signals are bad, we can't predict markets anymore, and they're underperforming. I mean, it's clear that there are many problems with the fact that the Fed can tighten four times in 2018 and then pivot and start lowering, like it's a roller coaster. It's a really bad environment for value investors and people that have a long-term view, because you get a lot of these ups and downs, and then you have the Fed and the president not talking, not on the same page. I think diversification is key. Therefore, 20% in cash / silver. So in other words, if you are saving, if you want to be liquid, have cash or silver. And silver, I either like, the physical, if you really think that there's something that's cataclysmic coming. But if you don't, if you're just looking at it as a hedge, as a trade, you can, there's a physical trust that you can invest in that's 100% backed by silver. And it's from Sprott, for example. That's 20%. The reason I like 20% with cash and silver is because I like to have some dry powder in case there are good corrections in 2020 from any events that have to do with bad judgment from the Fed or some bullshit out of China or something that we can't predict. So I like that, because if there are opportunities, I'd love to jump on them. 20% cash gives you that. Or silver. So if you like an alternative to cash, you can do silver. 35% real estate or REITs. The reason I like that is not because real estate is cheap, but because real estate is in high demand. There's an entire generation, Craig. They're called the millennials. Nobody gives a shit about them in terms of their financial stability and power. But nonetheless, they're hitting their 30s. They need to start having families. They need to start moving out of the metro areas into these mini suburbs. They need to start buying homes. And real estate is in very, very low inventory levels, historically low. There's going to be a need to build so many homes around the U.S. in many, many cities. I love the idea of real estate, but if you don't like real estate, you can do REITs, real estate investment trusts. That what I liked about them is they offer you ways to get into niches that you can't by yourself. For example, I'm invested in a REIT that has storage units for cold foods, for Amazon, for Walmart, for Whole Foods, for all the major ones. And they are that company is rocking. That REIT is up over 100% in less than 2 years. I love healthcare REITs. So there are many niches that you can't get into. You can't buy hospitals as an individual, but you can as a REIT investor. So you can't rent office space to the U.S. government as an investor, but you can as a REIT investor. So I love I love REITs, and we talk about them on the website. And if you click on their top menu, you'll see the button that says dividends. We talk about that in there. 25% in my favorite asset class, which are called the dividend aristocrats. It's a group of 52 companies that have risen their dividends year over year consecutively for over 25 years. In other words, these are companies that no matter what's happening, no matter who's president, Bush, Clinton, Trump, Obama, they've been able to raise their dividends for over 25 years straight. And that means that they are able to combat any interest rate policy, any Fed chairman, anything that happens with globalism in the world, and they tend to outperform the S&P 500. Very easy to invest in as an ETF, or if you want to pinpoint each one, there's a few that I like right now that are very cheap, and we talk about them in the newsletter. 10% in select cannabis companies. There's so much hemp growing in the U.S. It's insane. You can feed the entire world with just the hemp that was grown in 2019. So it's so easy to grow, right? That's not where the money's at. The money is where the brands will come in, Craig. Can you name brands in the cannabis sector? No, there's no Sony's, there's no Apple's, there's no, you know, there's no Coca-Cola's yet. That's where the money will be. And if you can find those retail juggernauts, you'll be able to make a fortune. 10% in mining stocks. Love the mining stocks right now in terms of the value. And if you go to wealthresearchgroup.com/gold playbook, you'll find that it's the most comprehensive gold, silver investing manual online. And if you go to wealthresearchgroup.com/4W, the number four and the letter W, those are the four winners we highlighted in 2019. I think three of them will do absolutely well in 2020 as well. And there's another company that I really like that I'm invested in that's going to be a producer in 2020. Currently not producing, going to be a producer in 2020. It's one of the only few companies that will start production in 2020. It's called Winston Gold, and it has a legendary chairman of the board, Joseph Carrubba, who came from Newmont, of all companies, like the biggest gold miner in the world, went to this tiny small cap company. So that's something that I really like, and that's basically where I'm at in 2020.
Great stuff, Lior. I mean, really, from any traditional sense, and we have to still look at things traditionally, and I mean, the markets, the central banks' propensity to keep propping them up, we have to continue to look at other investments. You can't just simply look at gold and silver. You know, we always say, gosh, you know, you've got to be diversified. And it's hard to find objective, rational analysis of the markets. And like you said, 99.9% of the people out there are not professional traders. They need all the help they can get. And so I think you've laid out a great case. Again, it's wealthresearchgroup.com, correct?
Correct. And I think with regards to what you're saying, I would say two things. One, with regards to gold and silver, if you're going to just have it stashed, then just figure out how much time you think a depression would last. In my opinion, if there's a big depression because of how divided we are politically, it will take 2 years. So what I did was I figured out how much my family unit, me, my wife, and my girl, how much we spend as a family every month. I multiplied by 24. So in other words, 24 months, 2 years. And I converted that cash into gold and silver, 70% gold, 30% silver. And that's my gold-silver position. Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't need to add to it or to take away from it. That's done. And that's basically taking some of my savings, my cash savings, and moving them into precious metals. If you want to invest in precious metals as a trade, you'd be much better off doing it with either the royalty companies or with mining stocks. But look, the fact of the matter is diversification is the mother of all solutions for the average person who really needs to focus much more on his personal income and with his salary and with his career than what he can do with investing. Investing is something that you'll be able to double your money at in about every 7 to 8 years. So if you don't have $100,000 or $250,000 to get going with, then investing will be a minimal part of your life. And you should really focus on seeing where the jobs market is going. In the next 5 to 10 years, it's going towards medical professions, it's going towards tech professions, and it's going towards engineering professions. I'm talking about the US of A. So if you're looking for professions that you can earn over $100,000 a year, between $100,000 and $200,000 a year, you need to be either in the medical industry, the tech industry, or in the engineering industry, or service those industries in an ancillary way. But look, the America, where it's going right now, the baby boom miracle is over. There are no good manufacturing jobs where you go home and your wife doesn't work anymore and you're earning middle class income. It's done. Everything is going to be – not everything, but many jobs are either going to be outside the U.S. or automized to a level where the most of the value will not be in the compensation to the worker, but will be in buying more equipment. And it's really important to understand that issue and not be dwelling on the past.
Great stuff, Lior. Again, just shows the depth of knowledge and all the interesting insights people can find at wealthresearchgroup.com. Lior, thank you for your time. I look forward to seeing where this all heads in 2020. We'll have to keep in touch.
Thank you, sir.
And from all of us here at TFMR, thanks for listening. We'll try to have another Thursday conversation for you next week.